inner hall of life.
Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising,
the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous feminist ho living in New York City. I changed it, and you'll find out why later.
And Akua, one carefree black girl who specializes in all things mental health and all things ho.
Mm-hmm. We have two types of episodes on this here show. They are group episodes and interview episodes. On interview episodes, I, Sam, the principal host of this here show, one of my rotating co-hosts, this week it's Akua, talk to folks with insightful perspectives on sex, love, dating, gender, and race. And on group episodes, all the hosts come together and chat about sexual current events in the world, our lives, and yours. This happens to be a very special interview episode for many reasons. Mm-hmm. One, it's a part of our Polygamy series, where we're taking 4 weeks out of the month of May to talk about polyamory, ethical non-monogamy, and all that stuff in between. And then also, this is a two-part episode, so you're going to hear the first part today, which might be Wednesday, hopefully, if everything went well this week. And then you'll hear the next part on Friday, just because it was a really long episode with similar themes, but we just don't want people to sit there for like two and a half hours.
Exactly.
Yes, and this episode happens to be about thruples, triads, unicorns, and parenting while poly.
Yes, yes.
All good stuff.
But before we get into that,
What are we doing? We have some segments here for you. They are as follows. Well, normally we have Bae of the Week and Self-Care Tip of the Week, but we are cutting that this week just because it's a really long episode. But we will be talking about the Hoes of the Week, who are just some fans who we like to shout out, who support us, and pay a hoe because we got to pay some bills.
Mm-hmm. And if you guys would like to follow along with the conversation had on this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag InnerHoeUprising so we can see it, and hashtag Podin so other people can see it.
And we're hopping right into Hoe of the week.
And
so
our,
many people.
Our hoes of the week who paid a hoe are Melissa P, Lauren H, Huey K, JM, Ruben, Milton K, and Samantha J. Thank you guys so much for your funds.
You're making this long episode possible.
Yes, you are.
So we got to pay for extra studios.
We do. Taking up time. We ain't a book. My personal hoes of the week are at Cupcake Tellum and at Empress Sheeta and all our graduating academic hoes, because I walk on Tuesday the 15th. I believe at Cupcake Tellum is walking today, Saturday, Saturday, May 12th. Yeah, I just have to shout y'all out because y'all did that. And of course, I'm only walking for Empress Sheeta because we have that, you know, backstory.
The fact that you know when people are walking.
I support my academic hoes.
I love you.
I love our fan base. Y'all support us. I got to support y'all.
That is beautiful. Congratulations to everybody.
Yes. So walking. If I didn't know, come on Instagram, slide in my DMs, mention me in your story. Let me see you in your cap and gowns. I'm proud of y'all.
Remember the one person who wrote in a listener letter, like, what do I do after? I think they're graduating in May, too.
Yes.
I forgot what the name was, but...
Congratulations to you. I hope you figured
the therapist,
out. Yes, I hope you figured out where you wanted to go afterwards.
Congratulations, folks. Also, very special shout out to all the people who have been showing us so much love on Instagram lately. Just the fact that people put us in their stories. You might not realize how amazing that is for us, but people watch stories because nobody uses Snapchat anymore. Mm-hmm. And they're going in and they're just like, oh shit, this is a cool thing. And they're clicking on it. So that's really awesome. And we really appreciate it. So shout out to Fana Down Orby. I don't know what their pronouns are, but they actually put us in their IG story, and then that made Timmy Marak then follow us and then slide in our DMs and tell us about all their stuff.
Yeah,
so that's really awesome. Also, shout out to Grumpy _ Gabby, who I think is in Scotland, and was like, my parents are poly and I love this poly series, so that was like so sweet and nice. Thank you for letting us know that. Sarah McCabe, who is also poly, I believe, who's really enjoying this series as well. And then the OG Coco Cherry Mango, who shouts us out all the fucking time, but thank you for shouting us out some more. And then also one last shout out to all the people who have been reviewing us on Apple. We actually got 50 ratings and reviews since April. If you want to, which we'll talk about this later, but if you want to enter our ratings and review contest, remember that you actually have to leave a review in addition to your rating so that we know who you are. because we won't be able to just see the five stars. But for the people who just did it and don't even want to enter the contest, thank you so much. So a quick shout out to all of these people. We have 83193, Clopez 16KK, The Crystal Lens, who's Crystal from the Boston Come Through podcast. Shout out to Crystal. Knee underscore Ka, Out of Your Element, King Checkmate, Metal.Fingers, Brittany 3, Cassie Wassie, The Wise Ho, love the name, Monster Maker underscore China, One Curly Queen, Half Pint Latte, who always shows us some good love, For the Love of Music, Tony Earl, Tax Addict, Seven That Tem Nickname, New Mom 9802, congratulations on being a new mom, happy Mother's Day, Kayla Ingrid, Camille underscore Linda, Gem Catchin 1202, Yada 1986, who might be Kenyatta.
Yes, Kenyatta.
Thank you, Kenyatta, who might be on the show later. Night Kit, Marion Alexandra, Hufflepuff, which I really fucking appreciate because that's a whole pun with Hufflepuff. Shout out to your house. Kara, Melissa Inez, Hickey underscore Vicky, A Queen 2B, and Summer Loving 3933. Thank y'all so much. Very fucking much. We really appreciate it. But if you want to help us monetarily, you can do so by going to innerhouseuprising.com, clicking the tab Pay a Ho. Oh, we have new tabs. Shout out to Jose, who's also was he in there as one of the people who donated? He's a new patron. He designs our website and he pays us.
Is
Isn't that amazing?
J.M.? It might be J.M.
Yeah, that is J.M. Thank you, J.M. Yes. AKA Jose. So now on our website, innerhouseuprising.com, we have a button that says Pay a Ho Once and Pay a Ho Monthly, which we'll get into a little bit later about the Pay a Ho Monthly situation. But if you want to go on our website and buy some merchandise, which we're changing up soon, but if you want to buy some vintage merchandise at some point, it's on our website right now. You can click the tab merchandise and you can also use the sponsor codes used in not this, but previous and future episodes. So if you would like to support Aho on a monthly basis, you can subscribe to us on Patreon and receive perks while you're doing it. This is an easy way to throw some dollars monthly towards the show because studios, transportation, and events are not cheap. And as you can see, every episode is not sponsored. If you're able and you'd be so kind, you can visit our Patreon, which is patreon.com/innerhouseuprising, or on our website innerhouseuprising.com and click the tab Pay a Ho Monthly. You can donate $2, which will give you access to private IHU gatherings, or it'll give you early access to public IHU gatherings, like the barbecue that we're doing sometime this summer, as well as our undying love and affection. And for the price of $5 a month, you can get all that, as well as access to exclusive behind the scenes video content. I really want to do a live stream on our Patreon soon because we recently hit $218 a month.
Yes, thank you.
Which is awesome. Thank you so much. We got to get on there and like strip for you guys.
Yeah, literally.
But not really, but like in our hearts.
I'll twerk a little
we'll
bit.
We'll be there. I will definitely twerk. I mean, that's great. That's a given. That's a given. Yeah, so if you want that, you can pay $5 a month. You can also donate any less or any more. So anything from $1 a month to $1 zillion a month, anything is greatly appreciated. It's just a more consistent way to pay a hoe, pretty much spending what you would for something like Netflix, but to help your favorite hoes instead. And hopefully you have money for us and Netflix. And if you don't, choose Netflix. I mean, there's a lot of content on there. It's fine.
There's more content that we can provide on Netflix. So
true. Yeah. Speaking of support, if you want to help us out in a non-monetary way and win some free IHU merch at the same damn time, we're running a special contest for spring, and all you have to do to enter is rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. By doing this, you're helping us pop up on lists that Apple curates. This will help expose us to new listeners and sustain us in the long run. If you want to participate, it's quite easy. All you have to do is follow the link that will be in the description of this episode under giveaway contest. Then hit the purple subscribe button at the top of the page, scroll down to ratings and reviews, click the review button, tap five stars, write a nice title and review, and hit send. If you hit send and you realize it's not going through, it's probably because your nickname isn't unique enough according to Apple, which means you have to just go back, make a new nickname, add some numbers and some symbols to it, or maybe just numbers, and then you should be able to hit send. And then after that, we're going to pick someone randomly, a winner who will announce at the end of spring, so please stay tuned. But for the people who have already rated and reviewed, our last guest, Ruby, has given us some discount passes to Poly Dallas Millennial, and we'll be giving some out to people who have already rated and reviewed, just because you helped us. So now we want to
help you,
and we also want to see you at Poly Dallas Millennium, because it should be a lit event. So from there, we're going to get into the first part of this episode, which is
Fuck it.
Our topic of the day, and today we're speaking with two people. The first part will be in this episode. The second part will be up on Friday. And we're going to start it off with Evita. That's a party on the weekend.
That's a party on the weekend. She love a party on the weekend. She love a party on the weekend.
All right, and now we are here with Evita. Evita is a Black, married, polyamorous babe who has been in two triads. She is also the star of Amazon's documentary, Poly Love.
Welcome, Evita.
Hi. I'm so thankful to you guys for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
We are thankful to you for being here.
Literally.
So we said that we were going to talk about unicornery and triads, but we have a little bit of... We have a little bit of gossip for you about someone who may or may not be in. By that, I mean May is totally interested in you. That we've heard from the
really?
Grapevine.
Yes.
Oh. So goodness.
We here at Inner Hole Uprising are going to start playing matchmaker.
Exactly.
If you need us to connect you with the love of your life, just slide in the DMs.
Yeah.
But for Evita.
Someone slid in our DMs and was like, by proxy, hey, can you slide in Evita's DMs?
I heard. We were like, okay.
And we were like, yes, we will.
I'm like totally blushing right now. Like if a Black girl can blush, I'm blushing about it. If a Black girl can blush right now.
The question is, if a woman identified Black person asked you to be her guest the weekend of Poly Dallas, is that a possibility?
Wow. So firstly,
someone trying to fly you out.
By the question you asked, I know who it is.
Okay.
And it's everything is a possibility. So I obviously have to think about it, but I feel like everything is a possibility. So yeah, that's totally a possibility.
All right. Cool. That's a strong maybe. And if y'all heard last week's episode, you might know who we're talking about too. We'll leave it at that and see what happens. Me and Akua are about to head out to Poly Dallas
this year too.
So, and maybe our other co-host, Rebecca. Yeah, so. Will be.
Oh my goodness!
All
I'll get to meet
hoeing.
You guys. That's amazing.
Yes,
we are totally excited. Very, very happy.
I'm super excited.
Cool. All right. Now
let's jump into.
Let's get into the episode. Let's get into the interview.
So just to start off, tell us a little bit about how you entered the polyamory lifestyle.
So my husband and I were married for about 9 or 10 years, and we were monogamous during that time. I knew pretty much since I was a teenager that I was bisexual, but I got saved when I joined the Navy, and I spent about 10 years in a borderline kind of Christian cult. And being homosexual was a sin, so I kind of stuffed those feelings down, but they never really went away. And so as we began to kind of move away from that establishment, I began to kind of explore my sexuality, but I was in this marriage where that just was not an option. And so I would do these kind of very surreptitious things. I'd try to meet people on Craigslist and women, because I was trying to flesh this out for myself. And so fast forward to maybe about 5 years ago, my son gets diagnosed with medulloblastoma, which is a brain tumor. He was 6 years old. And so we're dealing with chemo and radiation and, tumor surgery, and our life was just a nightmare. And my husband had a lot of sexual hangups. We had a very good relationship, but that was probably the one area of our relationship that just, we always had issues with because he was very sexually repressed. And so, and then, like I said, I was trying to explore, my bisexuality. And so we kind of tried to, so we were like, look, we have a really, really crappy life right now. And before I ask, is profanity okay on the show?
Of course.
Because I,
it is
thank
encouraged.
You. Oh my God. So hold on a sec. Fuck. Okay, good. I got that. Okay. So anyway, so we're having this really, really shitty life right now, and you've got all these issues, and I want to explore this, and so let's just have some fun. So I actually joked that we started with the song Birthday Song by 2 Chainz, where he's got that song, y'all been together 10 years, you deserve a menage. So he would say that to me kind of jokingly. And we would kind of joke about it. And I tell him, I'm like, well, when you put a BMW in my garage and we talk about it, So we kind of,
it's a man.
Exactly. Right. So there was a other side to that lyric. We would joke about it like that. And so we didn't know how to even do this. So we started first with, we went to the strip club on Valentine's Day with my sister. And so he got a lap dance, and then I went and got a VIP lap dance. And I just wasn't bothered. It didn't bother me that, you know, he was off with his chick. And, you know, I just didn't feel anything. And so then we thought about maybe going to Nevada and seeing if we could get a, you know, a prostitute or a sex worker, I should say. It was too expensive and just too much of an inconvenience. And then we thought of maybe trying to find an escort. And so we would kind of go on like Craigslist and stuff. And then that was very expensive and it just didn't feel right. And I was in a group online of bisexual women in San Diego. It was a meetup. And one of the members was in a group that was called like Adults Only Games or something like that. And they weren't open to new membership, but Meetup suggested another group called Open Minded Couples. And so I joined that group and they had an event. And it was a play party out in this like mansion, like way out in the boonies. And so, you know, my husband, he's Black, right? And Kevin has a lot of social anxiety. So he was driving. He's like, Vita, do you know anybody here? And I mean, we're in the sticks. There's no houses. It's just dirt. Yeah. And so
could have been a
like,
get out situation.
Right. Exactly. That's what he was saying. So he was like, do you know anybody here? And I was like, no. And so he was like, where the fuck do you have us going right now? Like, what are we doing? And so I'm like, let's go. You know, so we go out there. It's this beautiful house. There's this couple. And literally somebody opens the door butt naked.
Love it.
Like we ring the doorbell, she butt booty naked, and I was just like, whoa. And so that was our foray into non-monogamy. So we started with swinging, and then we progressed from there to, through the concept of swinging, we discovered the concept of polyamory. And swinging is a huge gateway to polyamory for a lot of individuals. And so we went to a party one day and this girl comes in with her boyfriend and then her husband comes later on and it like blew our minds. And they're all sitting there talking and chit chatting and joking with each other. And we were like, whoa, what the hell is this? Right. Yeah. It was mind boggling. And it appealed to my husband more than it appealed to me because he had a hard time with the swinging community because he's not really into casual sex as much as I am. Like, I'm a hoe out here. Like, you
know? So, perfect show for you.
Hoe is life. Hoe is life. Okay, there's no life like hoe life.
Same.
So the swinger community, I blossom. Like, that was my environment. But it was a struggle for him because he needed he feels the necessity to be a little bit more emotionally connected to people that he has sex with. Not that he can't have casual sex, but not to the degree that I could. That happened. And so he kind of was like, hey, you know, this is something I'd be interested in. But it was too early in our non-monogamy journey. And it was very volatile for me because in my mind, sharing him sexually, because I still looked at it that way. I don't look at it now like I'm sharing him because he's a completely separate individual. He doesn't belong to me. There is no way for me to share him because he's not mine. But at the time, that's the way I looked at it. So sharing him sexually was easy because sex to me, I don't attach the emotion to the actual act of sex itself, I attach it to the person. So that's why casual sex is so easy for me because I can keep it right there. Like I just don't get emotionally. Emotions and sex aren't attached to me. I'm attached to the individual. But for him, like he needed much more of a connection. And I felt like sharing him sexually was easy because his body is just a shell. His body's not him. But like his affection, his love, his care, his regard, his admiration, those things were mine. And I didn't want to share that with anybody else. So it was very, 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 very hard for me when we first opened it up and super volatile. And so we were like, nope, we're not going to do this. We're just going to go back to swinging. And then maybe about 6 months after that, I started wanting to have the experience of having a girlfriend because I knew that I'd liked women. I had slept with a lot of women. But I had never had the experience of having a romantic relationship with a woman, and that was something that I wanted. So we got into polyamory to date separately because he and I are like night and day. Like people are always like, how with you guys? Because we're completely opposite. And we also have very different tastes in women. So we kind of got into polyamory because we were just like, there is no way that we're going to find a woman that we both like. So you go get your chick and I'm gonna go get my chick and we'll do what we do. And then we randomly went to a swinger party and met our then partner at the time. And he actually approached her first. And then later on, she and I started talking. And then I began to pursue her and we kind of started this relationship. And then we all just kind of fell in love and was in a triad for off and on for 2 years. And that was our foray into polyamory. So before that, we were just non-monogamous. And I actually identify as non-monogamous because I feel like it's a much broader term. And then like polyamory is a subcategory of that, because polyamory mainly focuses on establishing loving relationships. But there are also people that are swingers and it's just about recreational sex. You know, non-monogamy presents itself in a variety of ways. So I just identify as non-monogamous, but most of my experience now, especially within the last couple of years, has been establishing polyamorous relationships and talking about and learning about and educating about polyamory.
A light bulb literally just went off in my head.
Just blew Sam's mind. She was like, that
I've been identifying as polyamorous for like 3 years now, but it is non-monogamous.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What? You just blew my mind.
You gave her the terminology she needed.
And I knew what both of those things meant, but I was like, I can identify as
a different perspective. You did
exactly.
That.
Oh, thank you.
This is what the series is for.
I love giving people the opportunity to be able to better articulate themselves to themselves and also to the outside world. Mm-hmm. So yeah, after a while, because I was like, this just doesn't feel right. I was like, I am polyamorous, but I didn't feel like it encompassed everything that existed in my relational identity. And so non-monogamy to me just feels more, it feels more broad. So I actually identify mostly, I say I'm ethically non-monogamous, but I usually say polyamorous just to simplify it for people. But if you ask me, how do you identify? I identify as just ethically non-monogamous. And I feel like that's broader.
I love it. I love it.
So we're kind of here. Tell us about the first triad experience.
Whew. Okay, so
I have a quick little interjection before that. Had you both dated people before that within the relationship? Okay, so this was your first.
One time, it was our first poly relationship, first time experiencing the other person in a relationship with someone else.
Wow.
Period. It was like totally new. And so what I tell people is that it was like never playing a game of pickup and then landing yourself in an NBA All-Star game.
Yeah.
So you're like LeBron, Steph Curry, you know, Kobe. I mean, we might have even brought Michael Jordan out of retirement for this game. And like, you've never even done like the little tights, like, you know.
Yeah.
Little community basketball game. Right?
To interject, was this the partner's first time in a triad?
Yes. So everybody was green.
Was that her first poly relationship at all?
Everybody was green.
Y'all was out there.
Wow. Okay.
Y'all was ready. Okay.
Tell us about it.
Yeah. Like when I say we balls to the wall, okay, everybody was brand spanking new to all of it. So we were just knocking up against each other pretty much the entire time. Like everybody was just fucking each other. Everybody, my dad actually said this to me and it was like gold. Sometimes we become better people at the expense of others. And that's what we were basically doing, because nobody knew what they were doing. And so we all were learning and making mistakes alongside each other. And it was terrible for me. It was terrible. It was a terrible time. We had good times, but the highs were really high and the lows were super low, and we never really got a chance to like stabilize and equalize and neutralize. And then her and my husband had a very, very good relationship. They got along very well. They loved each other very much. And it was really, really hard for me to process that because it was my first time experiencing it at all. And what I tell people is what a lot of couples think when they're coming into polyamory and they're going to go into a triad is they think that it's going to be less jealousy. It's going to be less opportunity for us to feel these uncomfortable things, all the scary things that you think of when you're exploring non-monogamy, because they're like, hey, we're with the same person. This person is for both of us. This preserves our couplehood. Because that's the scary part, is we want to not lose our couplehood. We want to preserve this. So this is how we preserve our unions, by having the same person. But what they don't realize is that it's impossible for you to have a exact experience with this, even if it's with the same person, because different people bring out different things in us.
Sure do.
And so they never go into it thinking, One of us may struggle to get along with that person. One of us may not be compatible with that person at all as time goes on. Those things just don't enter into their minds when they're going into it. And so we're like, hey, we like this person and that's all we know. We both like this person likes both of us. But they had a wonderful relationship. They got along very well. They understood each other. And she and I always say they were like peanut butter and jelly and she and I were like oil and water.
Mm-hmm.
And so it made things very hard because I was resenting him because I couldn't understand why he had a good relationship and I didn't with her. And then also I allowed a lot of my discomfort about his interaction with her mar my relationship with her. So I couldn't enjoy her because I was too busy in my feelings about what he had going on with her. So couples come into polyamory thinking that triads are polyamory 101 when they're actually like polyamory 301.
This sounds like the PhD of polyamory, actually.
Right, it's the PhD of poly.
We in grad school.
Yeah, exactly, right. This is a grad school course. Yeah, exactly. So it's like you don't even know what you're going to be like in the space of seeing your partner in love with someone else, seeing your partner romantically interact with someone else, and then you're going to throw yourself into an arena where it is all happening in real time right in front of your face.
Sheesh. So paint the picture for us. So you both met her. I'm assuming there was some sort of like cupcake fantasy.
Dating.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Pie in the sky
yeah.
kind of phase. What was that like?
In the beginning, so we met her in the summer. And every
Perfect.
Summer we send our children to, yeah, girl, summertime, love, summer, summer, summertime. So we meet her in the summer and our children were off with their grandparents. So we always get buck wild.
Yeah.
Like for that
oh,
6 weeks that the kids are gone.
Yeah.
Right. We be doing the most. We kind of got lulled into this kind of fantasy of we weren't really dealing with real life. Because the kids were gone and we were just gallivanting around San Diego. Love it. A lot of it feels so serendipitous. It feels like you're struck by lightning. It's like, wow, what are the odds that we meet this person that we both like, that likes both of us? What are the odds? And it's this very euphoric feeling. So we were riding that high and the kids weren't here. And so we were just enjoying it. And then it was like, now we're in this relationship and now we're actually in this instant family. So it was like add water and stir. You know, the kids come back and everything became super real. And we just were not prepared for the things, the very complex things that we were experiencing. We weren't prepared for it. I wasn't prepared. I definitely wasn't prepared for it. And honestly, I think a lot of triad success really just has to do with having the right people. And, you know, she was the right person for him, but she wasn't the right person for me. And we did try to make the relationship such so that, you know, because we, you know, we broke up and got together and broke up and got together a couple of times. And yeah, we did. It was off and on, it was very rocky. And, you know, I did try to be the person that said, hey, you guys continue your relationship. And that was, we did, you know, try to do that. You know, you guys can continue your relationship, you know, and go on, because I just couldn't in good conscience tell him, because I didn't have a good relationship with her, you can't have a good relationship with her. And that because I didn't have this kind of relationship, I couldn't make that work, but you can make that work, but that's too bad because I couldn't make it work. You know, you have to end your portion of it. That just didn't feel good to me. But it was so hard to do that because a newbie poly person is just usually not there unless you're just inherently polyamorous. And there are people that are just inherently this is who they are. I definitely feel like my husband falls a lot more in that category because he adapted to this environment very well.
And when you say inherently, like they have the communication skills or like they feel this sense of compersion instead of jealousy or
no, not even that. This the concepts that you need in order to live this life successfully, they already come like equipped with. Like it already makes sense to them. You know what I mean?
I see. They don't have to do the unlearning of monogamy.
Right. Yeah. They don't have to do the unlearning and the relearning. Like once they're presented with the concept of how this has to work, it already makes sense to them. But Kevin kind of already came equipped with the logic portion of it. Whereas I came into this with all of the emotion and I had to establish the logic so that I could counteract the emotion, but he kind of already came in with that logic. So when the emotions would hit him, he could access that logic a lot sooner than I could. So I do feel that there are people that are just inherently adapted to this life and living this way, I just was not one of them. No, it has been a learning experience. It has been a learning experience for me.
And what exactly, when did the, well, you said after the kids came back, but what was the moment that you realized that you weren't compatible with the other person?
Honestly, it's very hard to even say that that's entirely accurate, because I don't know what my relationship would have been like with her if it was just she and her and Kevin had never been involved. So it's very, I even loathe to say that that was entirely it, but I would say probably about maybe 3 or 4 months into it, to where I was like, okay, this is not working for me. Like, I was like,
How is that manifesting?
She and I were having a difficult time getting along. Kevin and I were having a difficult time, because what essentially happened for us is the breaking open of our marriage. It was the moment where we separated and became two people. Before that, we were still operating in that, especially because we got married in such a Christian setting, one heart, one mind, one flesh, one life experience. That is what marriage is. That triad was when we became two people. And that breaking apart is a very scary process. And so we did not have a good relationship through that process, because it's a hard process. So I had two relationships, two romance, and we were close. And well, we were partially close. We weren't totally close. So we weren't able to, we still swung and stuff. We could still carry on sexual relationships, but we couldn't have any emotional ones. And so I had two romantic relationships and neither of them were good.
Sheesh.
And they at least had their good relationship with each other, which just made things worse, because I'm like, at least you guys have a good relationship, but I have two romantic relationships and neither one of them are pleasing to me in this moment right now. You, because I'm experiencing a transition in my relationship with you, Kevin, and then she and I, because I'm letting my discomfort about her relationship with him mar my relationship with her. And then I feel like she and I, what we wanted out of a relationship with a woman, neither one of us had it to give to the other person.
What is that?
We just didn't have it. She wanted a much more, like, when we asked to open the relationship, she was the one who didn't want it open. She was very resistant to that. And that's not common. Usually it's the person that comes in that says, hey, we need to open this up. But we were the ones that were like, we don't want to be closed. Like, so we were the ones that kind of fought for that. And me specifically, I was actually the catalyst for that change. But she wanted, I think she expected me to be a little bit more girlier. She expected me to be a lot more, like, she was very cuddly, very canoodly, very kind of like clingy partner. And I hate to use that word because it has such a negative connotation, but some partners are just much more affectionately needy than others are. I'm a very independent partner. I'm also very frank. And she really valued my opinion of her and expected that I would value her opinion of mine. And yeah, that's the number one way to set yourself up for failure with me. Like, first of all, it's not that I'm an asshole, but I really don't give a shit about your opinion. Like, you know what I mean? So
love it.
You know, I am who I am. I know that I'm a decent person. I know my self-worth. And if you don't feel that way, cool. Like, you know, like, I know you're not going to like everything about me. I know that I'm not always going to resonate with you. And I'm totally okay with that. But she wasn't a person that was like that. She was a person that was very heavily invested in the opinions of her partners and expected that they would be the same with her. And so we clashed a lot in that regard. And then two, she wasn't a terribly self-aware person, and self-awareness is very, very, very important to me. And so that was a challenge. And I don't have a lot of patience. And I'm sharp when I'm upset. And I had a bad temper problem, and I did a lot of very, very, very not cool shit. I did a lot of, I'm not even going to like try to make it seem like it was all about, I did a lot of fucked up shit because I was, these feelings were so horrible. I had never dealt with them and I did not have the tools to deal with them. And I did a lot of very scary things, honestly, to both of them. So a lot of very, like I enrolled myself in anger management because of being in the relationship, because I did a lot of scary shit. A lot of borderline and a lot of abusive shit. I never outright like abused her, and I didn't like being that person, which is why I fixed myself. And I was like, first of all, you got to get your ass out of this relationship, and then secondly, you need to deal with this shit, because this is not who you are. A lot of people would say, well, you know, Polly, why, like, they would blame Polly for that. Well, you shouldn't be doing this, because, you know, Polly brought this out of you. And I always tell people, I'm like, no, polyamory, I'm thankful to polyamory for bringing that out of me, because I don't want there to be any situation or any scenario in my life where that's how I behave. That's not okay in any arena. So I'm glad that polyamory brought that out for me, because it set me on the spiritual and emotional path that I'm on now. And I'm a much, much, much more self-aware, much, much, much more self-contained person than I was when I was going through that process. So, but it, you know, like I said, sometimes we become better people at the expense of others. And that definitely was the case. And then we just, too much damage had been done by the end of the relationship. It was just too much damage had been done. And every time we would get hopeful and go, this is going to be the time that we would do it, each end would be much, much, much more volatile than the one before. And so it got to the point where it was like, okay, like, you know, are we going to keep rolling the dice? And, you know, how much damage is going to be wrought before we just go, you know what? Maybe this is just not something that we should be doing.
How did the end of the relationship come about? Like, what was the breakup like?
It was very, very nasty. It was volatile. Kevin had gone away. He had gotten this new job that required him to travel for work, and he had gone away, and she was supposed to come and help me with the kids. And she and I were broken up. Him and her were still together. But we were kind of re-talking about kind of getting back together, but we were trying not to call it that. We were just trying to spend time together and see what happened. We were alone for the weekend. She was supposed to help me take care of the kids. We did not get along. We had a big fight. She left. Then I didn't want her to leave. Like, literally, we had a moment where I was on the hood of her car, and she's driving down the street with me on the hood of her car, because I was sitting on the hood of the car because I didn't want her to leave, and she pulled off. Oh, I shit you not. In my parking lot at like midnight.
And this is on Poly Love?
No, now, not that okay. particular part. But, okay. but she...
No, I'm just Josh.
But, yeah, no. So she actually said, Vita, like, you know, I just don't want to, you know, so she ended it. And I was really, like, devastated by it, because I was like, I want this to work, because you know what? It felt like a W. Like Kevin got a W and I got an L, that he could have a good relationship with her and I couldn't. I felt like a loser. And I could not let go. I just couldn't say, Vita, some people get along with him, some people don't, especially because I'm the one with all the friends. I'm a social butterfly. I'm a relationship. So I knew that I was going to get into polyamory and I was going to crush it. And that was not my experience for a long time. On the surface, he appeared a lot more successful than I did, because I had a tough time establishing relationships. It was super challenging for me, and it just wasn't for him. And so it felt like a loss, and I just could not let go. So she actually ended the relationship. And then he continued the relationship on with her. And then they ended it about 2 weeks later for their own, like, separate reason, which I don't really want to get into, just because I don't want to put her business out in the street. But yeah, so they ended it for a separate reason. And then they tried afterwards to see if they could establish something, you know, between each other. But then she moved into a different kind of relationship dynamic and actually relocated. And so she actually doesn't live here anymore in San Diego. And they just weren't able to ever find something that worked for them. But they still talk. I don't talk to her. I don't have anything to do with her. That's what feels comfortable for me. But they, to my knowledge, they do still talk. And occasionally they'll, you know, check in with each other and stuff like that. And so that's pretty much how it ended.
And at that point, had you come to a place where you were like, it's fine if Kevin still has whatever kind of relationship with her that he does?
It was, I was petty about it and salty. I'm not going to lie. First of all, I am a petty, salty bitch.
I love to hear Polly people say that, though, because yes. There's like this false, like, oh, we're all like higher beings.
And content and self-actualized.
Yeah, exactly. No.
Look, petty and the Jets, peppermint, petticoat junction, seems like you're petty. Okay, you is messy, you is petty, and you is extra. That is me, okay? I'm petty. So I'm petty and I'm salt bae. That's what I'm talking about. Like, one time I told him, I was like, I just feel like being salty. He was like, Vita, you don't feel like being salty. You are salty. It's who you are. Like, wow. You know, that's who I am. So I was like, look, I can't make this choice for you. You do what you want. You can have whatever relationship you want to have with her, but I don't like it, and I'm not going to act like I do. But, you know, so that was kind of my mentality about it. And so I was like, and keep it as far away from me as you possibly can. I could, like, let him have whatever relationship he had with her as long as he just kept it as separate from me as he possibly could. And so that was the space that I was in. And he was comfortable with that. Because one of the lessons that I learned in that relationship is wonky things happen when you try to get in the way of and keep two people apart that have the kind of connection that they did. And I saw the kind of connection that they did. I knew. I saw it. They loved each other. They loved each other very much. And trying to get in the way of that, very just funky ass things happen. And that was my lesson. I learned that in that. And so I was like, Vita, like, if you try to get in the way of this and keep this from happening and control it, you're going to lose.
What kinds of funky things or wonky things? I'm not sure what
you did. You know, them feeling like they may have to sneak around, you know what I mean? Or him resenting me, you know, because I'm keeping him from someone who he's connected to, you know? So just very, very ugly things can happen in that space. You know, your partner can get angry with you, you know, for feeling like, you know, you're standing like you don't want them to be happy, especially if you go on and establish your own happiness elsewhere. You know, they can't help that this is who they fell in love with and that, you know, and that they did, this is the connection that they had with this person. You know, it wasn't personal. They weren't doing it to you. And so you have to kind of learn to kind of, it was very hard for me. It felt so personal. It felt like he was doing it to me, but he wasn't, you know, he was just, the heart wants what it wants.
That is a word. You are speaking to my personal life so much right now.
I'm so glad.
Thank you. So after everything was said and done, was there some reconstruction that needed to be had on you and Kevin's relationship?
That's a really good question. No, you know what? I think what I would liken it to is we were in, after that relationship happened, it was like, okay, it was like the breaking. It's like our relationship is broken apart. We're in a new frontier. Let go. That's kind of the way it was. So we've always had a strong and solid relationship. And so we weathered the storm. Like, you know, our relationship is very weather-worn. We packed a lot into our marriage. So it was more of like, okay, we're in a new frontier now, let go after that, you know? That's more how I would describe what it was like.
Like a phoenix from the ashes.
Yeah, exactly. It was cool. Like, okay, we got through this. We're in a new place now. Let's make it do what it do.
Great.
And that's kind of what we did, yeah.
Cool. And right now, we're going to dive into parenting a little bit, but right now, sure. Y'all are just doing y'all right now?
So he has a long distance relationship, a partner, her name is Rosalyn. I love her. She's wonderful. She and I have a great relationship. We were friends before and they met in a Facebook group online. And she's brilliant. She's very into blackness and feminism. So she loved your podcast. When I told her I was going to be on it, she was like, oh my God, she was so excited, and she wanted me to make sure, like, she was like, make sure you put a plug in there about solo polyamory, because not all people approach polyamory from being coupled, and you know, she's very solo poly. She lives by herself. She has no desire to get married or, you know, live with any of her partners, and so she's fiercely independent. She's amazing. She's very into, like, black feminism, and I love her to pieces. And so he has her, and they've been together for almost a year. It'll be coming up on a year in August. And then I am dating a couple. So I have a boyfriend and a girlfriend. I started out dating my boyfriend about in like September, October. I like fell in love with his wife almost immediately.
Oh. Upon like, meeting her?
Like I met her, and the funny thing is she was like coming from the gym. She was like not super like she, and she just kind of walked in, and I felt like I got struck by lightning. I was like instantly drawn to her. But it took her a long time to develop her feelings for me. So he and I were together for about 6 or 7 months before she and I ever did anything even remotely close to romantic. And then my birthday weekend, she changed her tune quite suddenly. And so then we began seeing each other. And so now we've been a full-on triad for about 2 months.
Nice. And how is that going?
Oh my gosh, it's so much more calm. I do not understand why more married couples don't seek out married women for triads. Because I know a couple of married women that are in triads. And it's so much calmer. It's so much calmer. I still experience a lot of the same feelings that people in my position or in that unicorn position experience, the isolation, you know, the couple privilege. Like I feel it, But because I come at it from being in a couple myself, I think I understand it a little bit more. And so it just doesn't affect me the way it does other people. And then also I have a whole ass life outside of them. So it's, I don't feel this necessity to be kind of like, to kind of press into their relationship. We can go at a comfortable pace because, you know, I have an entire life outside of them. I can't really give them that anyway. So it's much, much, much more peaceful. It's much more calm. And then the partners that I have, they're just, they're wonderful. They're just amazing people. They're so emotionally self-aware and very intelligent. And like, we connect mind-wise. So even the few, because we've had our issues and we've had different times where things have come up, but we talk about it so peacefully and so calmly, and it blows over so much sooner. Like when in my first triad, we go through stuff for days. And now we sit, we have a conversation about it. Everybody's feelings are heard. Everybody gets validated, you know, and then we just get back to loving one another. And it's much, much nicer. I'm enjoying myself very much. They're amazing people.
Would you say mm-hmm. That is a testament to their temperament or because they have had poly experience before? Had they had triad experience before?
They had non-monogamous experience before, and they also had experience having more than swinger relationships with other people before. I think I'm their first experience with actually being like in love with someone. So I don't know that they've had that experience before me. But they had experience where they had ongoing relationships with people and there were emotions involved, you know, and, you know, they were actual relationships. And so they weren't, and most of their relationship has been spent non-monogamous. Like they only had a brief monogamous period. So their non-monogamy time is actually clocked in at a lot longer than mine. Because me and Kevin have only been non-monogamous for the last 5 years of our relationship. But I want to say they've been non-monogamous for probably a good 7 or 8 years or something like that. Pretty much their entire relationship, once they got married, you know, from the gate, they were like, you know, we're opening this up. We're not, you know, remaining closed.
Veterans.
Yeah. And then too, I think it's also who they are as people too, as well. So I think it's a combination of both. I think it's a combination of the, and then I have triad experience. So when things pop up, I'm like, oh yeah, I know what this is. Oh yeah, I know what this is. And so not only do I know what it is, I also know what's going to work and what's not going to work. That also is super helpful.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Mm-hmm. And for the folks who have never been in a triad, can you just like paint the picture of what a triad looks like? Everybody sees the monogamous couple on TV or whatever. And it's like, oh, I wake up, I text bae good morning or whatever. And sometimes we go on dates and we're here with the kids cooking food. What is like that day to day like being in a triad?
Pretty much the same, just with an extra person. So, you know, we, you know, she would come, she would help out with the housework. She was like a third parent to our children. You know, we text each other, good morning, how are you? You know, they would have times when they would go off together and go on dates. Actually, we had a schedule. So Wednesday nights was their night so they could get, because a lot of people don't know this, but a triad is essentially four relationships in one. Mm. So it's the three-person dynamic. And then it's the individual legs of the triangle. Each individual leg of the triangle has its own separate relationship. And all four of those relationships have to be nurtured. Because if one of those legs are weak, the entire triangle is weak. So, you know, you have to be very intentional about making sure that all of those, especially in the beginning, until the triad feels stable and a lot less scary, and you feel that. Because like now in my triad with the couple that I'm with now, I don't clamor for, we need to have a set schedule of me getting a long time with you, me get a long time. I don't need that. Whatever time I get with my partners, I'm grateful for. And if I get a long time, and if I feel like I need specific alone time with a specific partner, I know that I can ask for that. Whereas until you establish that sense of security, you have to be very intentional about making sure that those relationships get that time. So on Wednesday nights was their night to be together. And I would go off and spend time with my friends, or I'd go to karaoke. And then my night with her was Thursday, and I think my night with Kevin was like Tuesday, or she'd go back home to where she lived, and then we'd spend a couple of nights together. And so that was that. But yeah, we go on individual dates, we go on three-person dates. I actually kind of enjoy being out in public in a triad, because the stares that you get, all three people holding hands, or someone seeing me kiss her, and then kiss him, and then her kiss him, and it was very, very fun because I'm kind of a ham. So I enjoyed that aspect of it. But yeah, it, you know, people feel like it's very weird. It's not. The sex was fucking amazing. And I think that's probably why we lasted as long as we did, because the sex was so good. Because we all just really were turned on by each other. We all just pushed each other's buttons. And so when we would get in the bedroom, it was, and we weren't in our feelings, because we would have times where sex devolved into somebody in a pile on the floor in tears.
What? But, wait, you have to tell us about that instance. You have to tell us about that instance.
I'm going to tell you guys the funniest story. Oh, this story is so funny. So I create these like super bomb sex playlists. My sex playlists are the shit, okay? Like I can pick good music to fuck to. I really can. So I would create like playlists for like my individual partners and whatever, blah, blah, blah. And so I created a playlist for like me and Kevin, and then I created a playlist for like three of us. And then Kevin like created a playlist for him and her. And there was a song on it called End of the World by Matt Albert, who I had let Kevin listen to the song. And I told him that I really love this song because the song reminds me of my relationship with him. And it was a very special song to me. He just thought it was a nice song and put it on the playlist for him and Brie. Mm. So we're having sex, and all three of us, and we're having a good time. And I decide to get up and go smoke a cigarette and read for a little bit and give them some alone time so they can have some, you know, alone sex. And so I'm patting myself on my poly back for being so mature and, you know, giving them the space to kind of enjoy themselves. And I'm sitting outside on the patio reading my book, and my fucking song comes on.
Mm, I would have been hurt. I would have burned
that
piss.
I would have burned the whole house down.
Okay, my fucking song comes on. And I'm sitting there, and I'm trying to calm down, and I don't know what to do, and these emotions are so overwhelming. And so I get up, and I go in the room, okay? And when I walk in, they are pressed together. He is, like, on top of her, and they are getting it. I mean, he is, like, that deep, like, that slow soul grinding.
Not to my soul.
Yeah, right. And I couldn't even have sex with him like that, because at the time, I weighed about 350 pounds. I recently lost 160 pounds because I had gastric bypass surgery 2 years ago. So at the time, I weighed about 350 pounds. So we couldn't have sex like that because I was too big. So, and I'd never really seen them in that embrace like that. I walked up to him, and I dug my nails into his back and just grabbed up a handful of his flesh. Ooh. And so he was like, so we were actually talking about it because he was laughing. Because he was like, so at first he said, you know how somebody comes in and they touch you and you're like, ooh, this is sexy. And you're like, no, wait, that's faint. Nope, this is not sexy. Mm-hmm. He said that was his kind of reaction where he was like, ooh, oh, wait, no, that hurts. So he gets up, but he's still fucking her. So he's hitting her from the back, but he's talking to me. So he's struggling and he's like, what?
Alan, Kevin would not finish that.
Right. He was like, what's wrong? What's going on? As he's stroking her, she's oblivious that anything is happening. Right.
So
I'm trying to like tell him about this without like letting her know that, you know, this is going on. And so I'm like, this is my song. But I'm like whispering and I'm like crying, you know. So he stops. And he comes out to the patio and we're having this silent argument. And so many couples like talk about the silent argument. So you're having an argument about something that's going on with the other person, but you don't want the other person to know that you're arguing about them. So you're whispering and you're like, why did you do this?
Yeah.
But you don't want them to hear, you know? So we're having this like silent argument moment. And I'm like hysterical, quiet. Oh my God, I told you that was my problem. And then it reminded me of our relationship. And I never let him read. And in his mind, he was just like, I just thought it was a nice song, you know, that's it. But I was so hurt about it. I was so upset. And that's just one of those instances where, you know, when keeping it real goes wrong. <you know? laughs> We did have moments where sex turned into a pile of children. But for the most part, the sex was amazing. Like we had, that was one area where we knew what we were doing.
How did you go about setting boundaries for your triad?
That was the one of the main problems is that it was a new frontier. So we didn't even know what boundaries were. And a lot of times you didn't know a lot of times in polyamory, you honestly don't even know that you have a boundary until it's already crossed. Until somebody steps into a space and you go, ooh, that's really uncomfortable. Like, you know, and then, you know, there's a boundary there and you have to explore that uncomfortable feeling to find out what that boundary is. And that's really, really like scary for people. So there's a phenomenon in poly that I read in the book More Than Two by Franklin Vaux and Eve Rickert. It's an excellent poly resource. I always encourage people to read it. And it's called Minding the Gap. So what it is minding the gap of where you want to be in polyamory and where you actually are. So, yeah, I'd love to be the person that would be completely 100% okay with Kevin going on a 2-week trip to Paris with Rosalind and feel absolutely no feelings about it. And I feel like mostly I'm that person now, but I have to make sure that I'm that person so that I'm not saying, yeah, go ahead, you know what I mean? Or, yeah, I'm cool with this, and then freaking out about it afterwards, because that sets up this dynamic where people kind of feel like they're in a minefield with you. You know, because you're like, yeah, go ahead and do it. Boom, when they do it, you know. Oh, sure, I'm okay with that. Boom, you know, so you have to really, like, make sure that you really get in touch with who you are and be very self-aware and kind of know yourself. And I have a tendency to kind of err on the side of caution when it comes to that. Because I find that if I get into something and I'm like, oh, I have no problem with this, it's very easy to open up. But it's a lot harder to close back down once you've said something is okay.
After you entered the relationship with your third, when did you let the children know that this was a setup that was going to be happening within the household?
So it was probably a couple of weeks after they came back. And what happened was she was at the house a lot. And at first we weren't going to tell them because we were like, well, it's really none of their business. Not in like a concealing thing, but just like, why do they need to know this person that we're like sleeping with? Like, why is that just something that they need to know? But she was very affectionate with us. And I am of the opinion that as parents and just as a society in general, we really, really, really have a tendency to insult the intelligence of children. And I try not to do that with my kids. I try not to insult their intelligence. So once it became apparent to me that they were probably intelligent enough to perceive that this is not a normal friend relationship, I was like, okay, guys, we need to say something to them.
And how old were the children at the time?
I believe the boys were 8 and Vivian would have been 5. Yeah.
And these are your biological kids with Kevin?
Yes, are my biological children with him. So we sat them down and I actually had to come out to them as bisexual because that was not even something that they knew about me. And that was not even something that they knew a whole lot about, period. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, they were 8, like, you know, 5, we weren't really talking to them about sexuality. And I don't talk to them about it, not because I don't want them to know about it, but I try to just keep it something that they come to me about as they experience it, because I don't want to like inject them with my opinions about those kinds of things. So it was just something that, you know, we just never addressed in the house, although they know about sexuality now, what it means to be homosexual, obviously what it means to be bisexual. But so I had to tell them what bisexuality was in the first place to explain why, you know, their mom, who they've only seen interact in a heteronormative way, will now be having this romantic relationship with this woman. So, and then we explained to them who she was and, you know, that they were to, you know, respect her, you know, as if, you know, as an adult and, you know, as a, you know, a parent figure. And they were just like, okay. And that was it.
Nice. And how did you all, first of all, did she have children as well, or was it just you parenting your children? Cool.
It was just us parenting our children. Now, the plan was for her to have children, and she really did want children. And that was actually a big bone of contention in our relationship, because it's not that we didn't want her to have children. We just wanted to be in a better circumstance. And she was very impatient. And I think a lot of that impatience had to do with, number one, her wanting like kind of like glue. I think she felt like if she had a child, it would cement her with us and there would be no disposing of her, which is, you know, valid, because feeling disposable is a very real feeling that you experience as a third. I even experience it sometimes, even though I just respond to it differently. And it has nothing to do with what my partners do, because my partners are very affirming of my place in their life and how much they value me. But it's more of just my own personal insecurity, because, you know, we're human beings. So, you know, feeling disposable is common. And so I think she kind of really, really wanted to cement her place with us, because she was kind of committed and, you know, wanted this to be a lifelong thing. And then it also was kind of hard kind of, you know, watching me have, you know, what she wanted, which was, you know, being the wife and the mother. And then we just, you know, financially and emotionally, and we really just did not want any more kids. I was actually a lot more comfortable with her having children than Kevin was, because the child would have been mine, but it wouldn't have been mine, you know? So, but Kevin, like, that would have been his child. And I just really, I think he wanted, he loved her so much. And he felt that if you love someone, then you're obligated, and they wanted children, that you're obligated to give them a child. And I was like, no. Like, I was like, this is a human life. I was like, the only, like, acceptable reason to have a child, you know, I feel, is because you want to. Like, this isn't a ficus or a goldfish. Like, you know, it's a human life. I was like, you don't really owe somebody a child, you know, so... that was something that he kind of wrestled with. That was, you know, so the plan was for her to have children. But, you know, we kind of broke up before, you know, that was able to be realized.
And you spoke about, you know, letting your kids know that they're to respect her as they would you. Did you set any rules or boundaries about discipline with the partner regarding your kids?
No, because... like, we don't spank. I haven't spanked my children in years. So I honestly can't remember the last time I spanked my child. And she didn't hit them. She didn't touch them. And two, I think because of her position, she felt like that really wasn't her bag. So I think, honestly, she was a little too lax with the kids sometimes. To where I'd be like, girl, I'm gonna need you to, like, you know, kind of like you can't just be the fun parent. But I think she kind of wanted to just be the fun parent because, you know, she wanted the kids to like her, you know, and she wanted to be accepted and all that stuff like that. And so I think she kind of was a little bit too much of, like, the fun parent because she didn't really know what her place would be with regards to, like, disciplining them and stuff. My children are, not to, like, toot my own horn, but they're pretty good. They don't need a lot of, like, correction. My children aren't, you know, like, those kinds of kids where it's just like, you know, you've been some badass kids before, you always got to, like, kill them.
Babies.
Right, babies kids. Like, my kids are actually pretty well behaved. They're very, very easily reasoned with, you know, so I don't have many moments where I'm like, okay, I need to discipline these kids. You know, it doesn't happen often. Yeah.
And when the three of you were going through the rocky times, did that affect the kids in any sort of way? Was that something that they could even, like, pick up on?
I think it affected them a lot more than I know. I do believe that. I think it affected them a lot more than I know. I think it affected them a lot more than I gave them credit for. And I definitely think it affected them a lot more than they talked about. Because I actually had a moment where this made me cry. So my daughter's a kindergarten and first grade teacher. She had the same kindergarten and first grade teacher. And I love her to pieces. Her name is Mrs. G.
Hey, shout out Miss G.
I'm gonna tell her to listen so she can hear her shout out. She's amazing. I gave her this book for teachers appreciation. I said in my head, I said, we're great friends. I love her. She's amazing. And she said that one day Vivian went to school. That's my daughter. And she went to her and she cried. And she said, Mrs. G, I don't have two moms anymore. Mm. Ooh. And because we're out everywhere. So my partner came to PTA meetings. My partner would pick the kids up from school. Everybody knew about her. She went to the school and she was like, and she was crying. And she said, Mrs. G, I don't have two moms anymore. And she like gave Mrs. G a hug, and Mrs. G hugged her. And I was very thankful to Mrs. G for being there for her in that moment, being an adult who cared, which is why teachers are so important. Because, you know, if you got a good teacher, teachers are an adult in your child's life, and I'm getting teared up just talking about it, but who cares? And sometimes your children, they can't come to you. They just can't. And we get so caught up in our own egos that, you know, my child didn't come and they didn't bring this to me. But it's not about you. It's about the space that they felt most vulnerable in. So I chose to look at it and go, thank God that she was a caring adult that my daughter could come and share that with. Because I didn't know that she was that affected by that. She didn't share that with me, but she shared that with her. So I think that they were, and I think they were affected a lot by the tension because they felt it. My son is very in tune to my moods, my eldest son. So he can tell when I'm upset and he'll, Mom, are you okay? Mom, are you all right? He can feel it. And I do believe that it affected them a lot more than we gave them credit for. It affected them a lot more than I could see in the moment because I was just so caught up in my own feelings that I just couldn't think about anybody else. I do believe that it affected them a lot more than they talk about. Even though they're very resilient, they're fine now, they're well adjusted, you know, they're like, I don't feel like they were scarred. But I do believe that it had an impact on them. I do.
And do they know the couple that you're in a triad with now?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. They do know. Oh my God. So my boyfriend is so sweet. He loves children. He cannot wait to be a father. He's going to be a stay-at-home dad. He works with children. That is his, he's an applied behavioral analyst. So he works with autistic children and children that have special needs. That's his populace. He loves it. And so when he, that's one of the things that I love about him so much is how interested he is in me as a mom. Because that was really, really hard for me to find when I was dating. Most men, and I tell people this all the time, as a married woman dating, it's very challenging because most men do not see any merit in investing anything past dick in a woman that they cannot possess. So they just did not care about that part of my life, me being a mother. But he was just like, I want to meet your kids. And so he was so excited. And when the first time they went to the house, they live like way out in like the sticks. And so they have like a bunch of animals on their property. They have chickens and ducks and bunnies. And he didn't collect chicken eggs for a week so they could have eggs to collect. He bought a bunch of carrots so they could go out there and like feed the bunnies. He took them on a hike. He had all these little snacks. He asked them what kind of snacks they had. And then he bought them each an individual gift bag. And he put little things in the gift bag each of them. He got my husband a gift bag and like gave him some stuff and was like, I'm so thankful. Your wife is an incredible person. And I want you to know that I care about you too. And he is one of the most thoughtful people I have ever met in my entire life. He's amazing. So
Your Mother's Day is about to be lit, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. So they're taking me to lunch today. I'm going to lunch with them for Mother's Day. They're treating me to lunch. And then my Mother's Day tomorrow is going to be with Kevin and my kids and stuff like that. And so I'm really, really, really looking forward to this weekend. But yeah, he's for my birthday. Oh, my goodness. They took me to Los Angeles. We went to the Getty Museum and we went to LACMA. It was his first time going to LACMA. We went out clubbing in West Hollywood, and they spoiled me rotten. They're amazing people, and they love the kids. They love the kids, and the kids love them. The kids, they really do. My daughter was like, when are we going back to Jessica? When are we going back to Jessica? So she would not let up. Like, I was like, okay. So, and they do so many sweet things for them. Like, they went and got plants so they could, like, show them how to garden. And he took them out to go see like the quail that they have. They have a bunch. I mean, it's beautiful out there. It's like going camping. It's like a retreat. So he like took them out there and like, you know, showed them the quail and whatnot. And so I like that my children are getting a chance to have these experiences that they wouldn't typically have had, you know, because I'm a city girl and I grew up in the city. So that is one of the benefits of polyamory that I love with regards to having kids is your kids get exposed to lots of different people. And I personally feel like the more a caring adult a child has in their life, the better off they do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The more people, adults that they have in their life that care about them, the more perspectives that they get exposed to, they just turn out to be much more well-rounded individuals. And I also think it gives them a chance to observe relationships. Because people say, well, you know, you don't want to have this revolving door of partners in and out of your children's lives. And that's true. But that's life in general. People are always coming in and out of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a word.
And the quicker you learn how to deal with that, the better off you'll be, you know, because people are always going to come in and out of your life. That is the human experience of people kind of coming in and out of your life. So the better you learn how to deal with that and be equipped with that, the better you can be in relationships moving forward, because we approach relationships from so much of a space of clinging to them and clinging to their place in our lives. Whereas I feel more comfortable practicing kind of an open hand love, you know what I mean? So you're in my heart, I'm holding you in my heart, but the doors are open for you to be yourself and for you to pursue your life how you want to, even if that path takes you away from me.
You were saying so much.
You are changing my perspective. I'm like, I need to try this. I need to start experiencing some of this. Change my outlook. I am converting in the moment.
Just one more question before we wrap up.
Sure.
I just had a question about the finances within a triad. Like, how does that play out?
Yeah, so that was something that we struggled with because she wasn't able to contribute. She wasn't able to be like an equal contributor. And so I say that the best approach for me that I feel like works is, number one, talk about it and negotiate it. Because that's going to vary from person to person and what your expectations are. So be very clear about what your expectations are and make sure that everybody is on board with that. And then that everybody is giving what they can give, you know, because not, you know, saying, okay, we're going to do 33, 33, 33. You know, if you can do that in a perfect world, that's great. But number one, that's hard to quantify. That may not be available or feasible for everybody that's involved. So I feel like you need to kind of get together, talk to each other, and find out what every person can realistically do. And then everybody agree to that. And then you make adjustments as life adjusts. You know, don't get too attached, or don't get too set on it always looking like that, because that may change as life goes on. And, you know, you may have to revisit that.
Well, Avita, that was amazing. Thank you so much. We hope to see you at Poly Dallas.
Yeah,
we're definitely trying to be in the building.
I'm actually doing a workshop, so it'll be my first time speaking at a conference. So I'm really excited about it. I'm doing transitioning from monogamy to non-monogamy and polyamory with children.
Incredible. Mm. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. If folks
want to find you on the internet, where can they do so?
So I am on Facebook as Avita Lavita Loca Sawyers. I am on YouTube as Lavita Loca 36. I am on Twitter also as Lavita Loca 36. This is going to be weird, but I'm on Instagram as Lavita Loca 34.
I had to switch it up on them real quick.
Exactly. I'm just now starting to develop these things because I picked up some notoriety on Facebook. I posted a triad rant video and it has like something like 13,500 views and like 300 or 400, 500 shares. And it's just gone kind of haywire.
You're viral.
So now everybody's kind of like clamoring for me to like, you need to get a YouTube, you need to do this. And so I'm like now in the process of developing all that. And so bear with me because I'm kind of a techno boob. So like I'm always frustrated with that shit. And I'm like, how do you do this, Kevin?
Well, we'll be here watching along as you journey into the techno world.
Could you send us that link to the Facebook video and we'll link it in our resources.
I'll send you the link to the Facebook video, and so that way you can link it. I'll also send you the link to the Poly Love documentary so you can link that as well.
Thank you.
Oh girl, I found it already.
Yeah. Well, Smith already working.
Please watch it. It's so
Will
good.
Do.
Yeah,
she
definitely.
Did such a good job. Her name is Michelle Flores. She did an amazing job. She represented us so well. It's a beautiful film. It really is.
That's awesome.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate this. So many people were so excited about this for me. And I'm so glad to have found you guys, but you don't know how many people were like, I can't believe you're going to be on that podcast. I love that podcast so much. So many people love what you guys do. No, even my brother, when I posted, I was like, oh, I'm so excited. I'm going to be on Inner Heart Project. He was like, that's a dope podcast.
Oh,
so
God.
Cool. So many people love you guys. Oh. You guys are so loved. Yeah. In my circle, so many people love you guys. Like, I even had a friend that was like, I subscribed to them on Patreon because I love them so much. Yeah, like. Yeah. So I was really, really stoked about this.
Oh.
They like me. They like me.
Exactly. Oh my God. Okay. Thank you so much. We will see you in July
and we will talk to you before then.
Yes. I can't wait to meet you guys. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I super appreciate it.
Thank you. Happy Mother's Day.
Yes.
Thank you. Have a wonderful weekend. Kisses.
Hope you guys enjoyed part one of our Thruples, Unicorns, and Parenting While Polyamorous episode. Mm-hmm. If you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so by going to Inner Ho Uprising without the G on Twitter, Inner Ho Uprising with the G on Instagram and Facebook, and innerhouprising.com to pay hoes, check out merchandise, look at our bios, and do all that other cool shit. Don't forget to subscribe to the Salty newsletter. Mm-hmm. So look at our feature in there.
You guys can follow me, Aku at Hey, Akua Girl, HeyYYAKUAGIRL on Twitter and Instagram.
Mm-hmm. And also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at SlamRid.